This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Allah Ta'ala, we continue with the seerah of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And so far, what I've shared with you, the events of maybe the first 15 years of his life, alayhi salatu wasalam, and the point of taking some time to talk about that, meaning not starting the story right from when Jibreel came, for example, and going to the end, is that it's important, in my opinion, that you get some context regarding his life, alayhi salatu wasalam, to know what the world was like before he was born. We spent maybe a lesson or two on that. And then also to understand what circumstances he was born in, alayhi salatu wasalam, what experiences were a part of defining who he was. Each and every one of us has a story, a unique story that helps define who we are. You are the sum of your experiences, the ones that you consciously and cognitively was a part of, and you chose, you had the choice to kind of do them or not, and the experiences that you didn't, that they were just, that was the hand that was dealt to you, whether you liked it or not. And the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam is similar. There are certain aspects of his life that he didn't choose. That's just where he was born and who he was born to, and certain things that happened. And he made some choices alayhi salatu wasalam as well growing up, and understanding them all helps us understand who he was. What you're going to find about him alayhi salatu wasalam is that he was the type of person that threw himself at life. Meaning, he wasn't the type of person who sat around and waited for things to happen. He would go out and he would experience life, and he would have experiences and do things. And sometimes it would work out, and sometimes it didn't. But he would learn from them all, alayhi salatu wasalam. And the reason we know that is not just from his early stage life. No, because he continued to live like that for the rest of his life, alayhi salatu wasalam. You see that in how he approached spreading Islam. He didn't back down from something new, from a new experience or a new thought or a new idea or a new adventure. He didn't step down. He actually is the one who came up with ideas that no one would think of. And I'll point that out to you throughout his seerah. It's very easy, actually. You'll see, like, when we talk about Habasha, when we talk about Al-Khandaq, when we talk about, he would do things that people didn't even think of. And if they thought of it, they would dismiss it because it's an insane idea. No one does that. But he would do it, alayhi salatu wasalam. And I think that's important to know, that's a part of his personality. And I think that is really what allowed him to pick up and learn so much within the short period of time that he had. With those 40 years, he was extremely wise, alayhi salatu wasalam, because he took on every experience and he allowed it to sink in. And he soaked it all up, alayhi salatu wasalam, and learned. So when we look, to quickly summarize, he lived in five different homes within the first 8 years of his life, which is a lot of instability, by the way, moving up from one place to the other. He observed the loyalty of his mother. He enjoyed the wisdom and the status of his grandfather, right? He worked at a young age because Abu Talib did not have the ability to support him. There was too many children in the home. So he worked as a shepherd, and dealing with animals and sheep specifically teaches you to be very empathetic and compassionate, because it's very difficult to deal with animals. And it also forces you to think in the sense of gathering, because animals tend to wander. So that was how he, after doing that for 7 years, you just had this mentality of always wanting to bring things together. And that was an important part of his personality later, alayhi salatu wasalam. And then he worked as a businessman, as a merchant. And that required him to travel a bit, alayhi salatu wasalam, and deal with people from different backgrounds, with different tongues and different accents. And when you're a salesperson, when you're buying and selling and you're trying to make a living, you learn how people are. You learn when they're truthful and when they're lying to you, when they're trying to rip you off. You figure it out, you learn to read people, and that's a very, very important skill to have, having good judgment of character. I don't know how you can pick that up. I actually looked into this for a long time in my life. Because I think it's important to be a good judge of character. How do you have good judgment of people's character so you don't end up being ripped off a lot in life? And I tried to learn it, and I failed. And I continue to get ripped off, and so will you. And that's fine. That's just a part of life. I think the only way you learn is you get ripped off enough times that you'll figure out the signs. But being a salesperson, that's going to happen in terms of frequency. It's going to happen a lot. Every day someone's trying to... So the Prophet ﷺ learned how to deal with people. You need to be someone who's going to succeed in buying and selling. You also have to have good manners. You also have to be diplomatic and know how to talk to people. So he picked up all these skills, alayhi salatu wasalam. Two other things that occurred within the next maybe 10 years of his life, alayhi salatu wasalam. Something called Hilf al-Fudul occurred. Hilf al-Fudul, Hilf is when there's a treaty, or there's an alliance, or an allegiance. All those words are correct. But the people of Mecca, they decided to put together a Hilf, where all of the tribes that had previously been at war would come together and agree to do something, which is anyone, if anyone is mistreated, if anyone has a mazlama, everyone is oppressed, then this group, this Hilf, would work towards bringing that back to them, making sure that they are served justice. And he said, he talks about it, alayhi salatu wasalam. He said, Hadartu Hilfan inda Abdullah ibn Jad'an. I attended a peace treaty that was signed in the house of Abdullah ibn Jad'an al-Taymi al-Qurashi. He was one of the Sadat of Quraysh, one of the leaders of Quraysh. And he, in his house, he brought people together, all of the heads of the different tribes that did not get along, and he had them all sign a treaty and sign an agreement that if anyone comes asking for someone, if someone comes claiming that they were mistreated or that there's an injustice that occurred to them in Mecca, that we would all work together to make sure this person was taken care of. And the reason this happened is that the Sadat of Quraysh, the leader, many leaders within the tribes of Quraysh, they had enough status and enough power to rip people off. They could easily just dismiss people who are demanding their rights or demanding something that they had agreed to upon, and they wouldn't give it to them. So it happened so many times that they decided, no, we have to stop this. And the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, at the age of 20 or so, attended Hilf al-Fudul. So he got alayhi salatu wasalam to learn how a treaty is worked out. How you actually bring people together and build an alliance of peace. And that's important, because that takes a lot of diplomacy. And a lot more goes into it than what meets the eye. Meaning just saying, yeah, we'll gather some people around and we'll agree to do something good. Good luck. It's very difficult to bring people to the table. It's very difficult to bring people who don't agree on certain things to the table. It's very difficult to actually put something together that everyone will agree to and everyone's going to be willing to put their name on. So there's a lot that happens. Alayhi salatu wasalam, the way he was in terms of his character, he was very attentive to these things. So he watched and he listened, which is why you'll see later on this will serve him well in the two bay'ah of Aqaba and the Sulh of Hudaybiyah. You'll see alayhi salatu wasalam is a master of this craft. He knows how to bring people together and how to get those that don't agree on much to agree on something that has khayr in it. And he learned the art of peace alayhi salatu wasalam by attending that. Another thing that he attended that was very important in his teenage years was something called Harb al-Fujar. There's a famous war that occurred between Qais Ailan, which is one of the great Ahad Jamajim al-Arab, as they call them. The Arabs have different ways of naming the different tribes. And al-Jamajim, Jumjuma is a skull, but Jumjuma it refers to a very large tribe, meaning a tribe that encompasses within it at least five very large tribes under it. So Qais Ailan is a very large one, Ahad Jamajim al-Arab, and Kinana, which is where the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam has come from. And if you know his nasab alayhi salatu wasalam, you'll know that Kinana is there. So between these two tribes, four wars called al-Fijar or Fujar occurred. And why do they call them Harb al-Fujar? The reason is because they would have these wars during the Ashhur al-Hurum, during the sacred months where it's not acceptable for anyone to bear arms during those months. So they broke that sacred rule of Ibrahim alayhi salam four different times. The Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam attended the last one. It was called Harb al-Barrad or al-Latima, because a man called al-Barrad did something. It's worth going back at some point and reading these stories because they're quite fascinating in what actually occurred. But the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam attended the last one. Now, there's some difference of opinion, obviously, amongst historians regarding that. But we do have an athar from him, alayhi salatu wasalam, where he recalls recalls being the person who carried the arrows and offering his uncles the arrows as they defended Mecca, because Mecca was being raided by one of the tribes. And he also learned marksmanship, alayhi salatu wasalam, during that. So he attended a war that went on for a couple of months, alayhi salatu wasalam, at a young age. So he learned what warfare was. He experienced war at a young age, alayhi salatu wasalam, and he participated. All of these are just experiences that are being added to it. That's how you should see your life, especially if you're younger. That's how I want you to see your life. See your life as just everything that's happening to you is just another experience that you have under your belt now. Something that you went through, for better or for worse. Something easy, it could be easy, it could be hard, it could be something very fulfilling, it could be something that really just drained you. A complete failure in your own measurements and your within whatever criteria you're using, or a success. All it is at the end is an experience. And you choose in your life whether your experiences are going to improve you, move you forward, strengthen you, and allow you to be better or not. And that is a different skill, honestly. Like that on its own is its own skill set. I don't know how to teach that, but I think if you just take time and reflect a little bit, you should be able to figure out how to do it. A lot of people aren't very good at it, and I'll tell you what happens. If something great happens to them, then they let it go to their heads. They see that somehow they were deserving of it, and everything that they did prior to it led up to it, so everything they did prior was right. And they go around telling people, this is what I did, and that's why this happened. And they actually believe that everything they did prior to this achievement was what led to this achievement. They're not able to figure it actually tease out what was helpful and what wasn't helpful, and they're not good at that. Or the opposite, if things go bad for them, they lose confidence and they lose hope and they feel like they were cheated out of something good. Wallahi, life is much more simple than that. Those are two complicated approaches to what's happening to you. It's much more simple than that. You're just going through experiences. You'll make good choices, you'll make bad choices. You'll get it right sometimes, you get it wrong other times. Just learn. The past is gone. You can never change it. You can't go back in time. Sorry to pop that bubble for you. You're not going to go back in time. Time travel isn't coming. You're not going to go back and change anything. Whatever happened. You can dwell on it. You can let it break you down. It can ruin you. Or you can let it go to your head and turn you into something that you're not, and you end up lying to yourself. Or you can just see the past for what it is. It's a bunch of experiences. Some easy, some difficult, some were rewarding, and some were not. And just learn from all of them. And once you have all those experiences under your belt, you're able to move forward. You're much wiser. You're much more capable. You're much more confident. And that's just really what life is about. And if you're able to figure that piece out, then you're going to be able, inshallah, you'll do very well. And the Prophet ﷺ, the reason I'm giving all these experiences, every single one of these experiences, at some point in the seerah, over the months to come, I'll point out and say, remember? See, he knew what to do because that experience. So don't underestimate the importance of an experience that you go through in life. Even if it was difficult and you're like, I wish I didn't. Calm down. It's okay. Take it for now. Persevere and you'll see that at some point this will come in handy. It'll come in handy at some point. The Prophet ﷺ, actually, let's move forward with I love this ayah because it really does, in my opinion, break down what I just explained to you. You find this in Surah Al-Sharh, فَإِنَّ مَعَ الْعُسْرِ يُسْرًا. And then he repeats it again because that first one is for the Prophet عليه الصلاة والسلام specifically. The second one is generic. إِنَّ مَعَ الْعُسْرِ يُسْرًا. With each difficulty, there'll be enough ease within it for you to get through, to make it through it. It doesn't mean that after each difficulty, there'll be ease. It doesn't mean that any difficulty you have is going to end. No, some difficulties, they don't end. Some difficulties end with death. At some point, that's how it's going to be. So this ayah is not talking about sequence. Difficulty, then ease. No. This ayah is talking about a simultaneous effect. You'll run through a difficulty, but there's always going to be within it enough ease for you to get through. For it not to break you. For it not to ruin you completely. And that's all you want. You may die, but you can die with dignity. You may lose, but you can lose with dignity as well. If you understand that in each difficulty, and that will take away the worry effect. You don't worry as much. You don't waste too much time worrying about what's going to happen. Don't worry. Every difficulty that is given to you, there will be ease in it for you to get through it if you're able to find it, and if that's how you see life in general. It's a very comforting ayah, but it's also a fact of life too. إِنَّ مَعَ الْعُسْرِ يُسْرًا. With difficulty, you will find ease. And the Prophet ﷺ, in the midst of his difficulty of losing his father and losing his mother and losing his grandfather and working at a young age and having very little in terms of wealth, there was always enough ease for him to get through these things. It didn't break him. I think that's worth kind of thinking about. So these are the four things that I want to point out today. Well, I'll make a list at the end of all of the experiences before his bi'athah, alayhi salatu wasalam. We'll kind of summarize them for you. What I want to point out is, I think it's important for you, especially again, this is just for my, more specifically my younger brothers and sisters, but everyone can benefit from this, is that life offers you the opportunity of picking up a lot of skills. The Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, his experiences gave him a lot of skills, a lot of skills. It gave the skill of perseverance, the skill of existing in a large group and not feeling left out and not needing too much attention and not requiring service. The skill set of taking responsibility of himself at a young age. The ability to deal with people from different backgrounds. The ability to deal with animals. The ability to... These skill sets, as weird as they may sound as I point them out, are very helpful. Like, they're very, very helpful. What people don't... When you're going to try to get hired in your life, you're going to come with this resume, this long resume that says all of the certificates you picked up and all the... I can tell you that most people who are hiring, they don't even read this stuff. Wallahi, most of it, you could write a short story on your resume, and I can tell you most of the jobs you apply to wouldn't even notice. They're not looking for that. They're looking for what skills do you bring. Like, what skill sets do you have? They talk to you. They want to say, are you personable? Are you teachable? Are you someone who can work in a team? Are you a team player? Are you respectful? Are you humble? Are you kind? What type of person you are? That's what matters more. You see, someone who has those skill sets, honestly, is a better employee than someone who has all the certificates. If you have someone who has all the certificates, who's studied everything, has the undergrad and the postgrad and the PhD and all that stuff, but you can't deal with the person, you can't speak to them, they don't know how to, then there's no point. This is going to drain the company, to make it difficult. They don't want you. But bring in someone who may be a little bit naive, maybe not have all the information, but this is someone we can work with. They're teachable, they're a team player. You're much more attractive as an employee, and you have better chances of being an entrepreneur anyways. Like, you'll be able to actually run your own thing with these skill sets. Don't underestimate the importance of skill sets, and they don't come from sitting in front of a screen. Screens don't give you skill sets, aside from scrolling more efficiently. Aside from that, the very few skill sets you pick up, maybe you can get, and I'm differentiating between information and skill sets. Yes, the screens that we have, we're blessed to have them. There's a lot of information we pick up. We learn a lot. Of course, all the knowledge that the human race has ever come up with is on YouTube. Basically, just punch in anything. Yeah? How to avoid being killed by a tiger. You'll find a couple of people explaining to you. Take a step back. Push your friend ahead, turn, like, there'll be things you can do. Like, it's not, you'll find something there to teach you how to do it. But skill sets are different. Skill sets require you to get out and go live life and be out there and take a job and take on an internship and go do things and involve yourself and volunteer your time. And that's really what the Prophet ﷺ did. He just threw himself at life. Whatever work. See, he didn't work as a merchant. He worked every job. He would talk about it. He worked every job that was available. He would carry rubble. He worked with people who would build. So he would carry rubble. He learned how to put the bricks. And at the time, there was no concrete, so it was labin that they used, which is basically a type of mud, this type of clay that hardens. And if you went to the Middle East and went to like an old home, like a grandparent's home or something, some of them were built by these huge rocks with something between the rocks that wasn't really concrete, and I mean, the walls were like maybe a meter. You could sit in the windowsill. Like, I used to sit in between the window and the end of where in my grandparent's house with a friend, because that's how big the wall was. So it's different. So he learned these things, alayhi salatu wasalam. And he learned hunting, how to hunt animals, and he would sell that. He learned to chop wood, and he would sell that. So whatever work was available, he did it, alayhi salatu wasalam. So he understood how people were and what lifestyles existed. So he wasn't naive. My biggest problem is when I'm dealing with younger people and I see and I find them to be naive. Like, they don't know outside of the bubble that they grew up in. They don't know much. Like, they haven't really seen much of the world. Their opinions will tell you that. And also, their ability to kind of get things done will tell you that as well. And I don't like it. I wish there were ways to kind of throw people out there to get more experiences. But it's important that you think that way. If you're young, think that way. Don't be afraid. Most of us don't want to be outside of our comfort zone. We want to be exactly where we're nice and comfortable and used to things. No. If you're young, don't do that. Don't do that. Get out. Go to do things you're not good at. Go out. Get yelled at. Go get yelled at when you're 10. Or else you'll be yelled at when you're 30. And I can tell you for sure, being yelled at when you're 10 for not knowing how to do something is much less harmful than being yelled at when you're 30 years old for not knowing how to do something you should have learned 15 years before. So go out there and learn. The Prophet ﷺ did that. So he knew how to manage money. You know how to, he was a good public, no, sorry, I take that back. He wasn't a good public speaker. He was an exceptional public speaker, ﷺ. He was one of the best orators that ever lived. Obviously, ﷺ picked that up by what? By sitting quietly all throughout. No, he watched orators. He attended Suq Uqav, and he listened to the great orators of his time speak. And he watched how they spoke and how they carried themselves and how they said things and how they used words to influence people and get them to think in a certain direction. He learned how to do that. And then he did it himself, alayhi salatu wasalam, and he spoke. These matter. These matter. These skills matter more, unfortunately, than the world tells you. We run after our academic degrees, and I don't think that's a bad thing, obviously. I don't even take people to our educational programs if they're not following a degree. You have to be studying. You have to show me that you're studying. It's important. But there's a second piece to that. There's another bucket that you need to fill. That bucket is your skills. What do you know how to do? You don't learn how to do things if you don't fail attempting to do them first. You have to fail a number of times attempting them before you learn how to do them appropriately. And I think that's something upon us as a community and as parents as well to make sure that our... Let's talk a little bit here. We'll talk a little bit with this today. So that's up to 25 years old, alayhi salatu wasalam. He has worked every job that was available to him. He's attended a war. He's attended a treaty. He's picked up a number of skills. He's doing okay. His lifestyle up till now, he's single. His lifestyle is whatever money he makes, he takes care of people around him. He gives a lot of it to Abu Talib. He brings some of Abu Talib's children into his house. He had his own house to take care of them. And then a lot of his friends were the people who couldn't take care of themselves. The people who are broke or just intellectually not capable of supporting themselves. These are the people who were always around him, alayhi salatu wasalam, and he used his wealth to take care of them. He never really held on to much money. He never needed to, but he made enough, more than enough for what his lifestyle required, alayhi salatu wasalam. It was very simple lifestyle. At the age of 25, or before that, maybe 23, let's do 2 years before, Abu Talib told him, "Why, you're working with me, I have a simple business. I don't really have a lot. The limit of how much money you can make with me is not that high. Why don't you consider doing something different? You know the trade now. Go do work with someone else." So the Prophet ﷺ said, "Well, who am I going to work with?" So he said, "Well, recently, Khadija bint Khuwaylid ibn Abd al-Uzza, she is one of the noble ladies of Quraysh. She's a very, very unique figure, Khadija radiallahu anha. It's important for you to know this because she's not just a lady. No. Khadija on her own merit, was an extremely unique individual. She was a lady who had her own business. She was an extremely successful businesswoman. She had been married twice in her life, and both her husbands passed away, and she had children from one of them. She had three children. And her husband, who had passed away, who ran her business, now is her business, needed someone to run it. She wasn't doing it personally anymore because of her children, so she needed someone to do it. She had a ghulam, someone who served her, his name is Maysara, who took care of things, but it needed a leader, like the caravans needed a leader. So Abu Talib told the Prophet ﷺ, Khadija doesn't have anyone to run her business anymore. It's quite a prosperous one. If you do that, and you keep, you continue to travel and buy and sell, then you can make a good buck for yourself and you can help her. She was a very respected individual. So the Prophet ﷺ said, sure, that's fine. So it was offered to Khadija. Khadija said, I need to test him first. So Khadija is not naive. She's a very smart lady. You'll see what I mean in a moment. She didn't say, okay, yes, of course, he can take it over. No, she said, I'll give him probation. So she put him on 3 months probation. This is before Islam. And Maysara was the guy who was in charge of, he was her eye. Meaning she would come back and report to Khadija, what does this man do? Is he someone, because Khadija, again, unique individual, didn't just care about making the money. She was looking for someone who had ethics, Like she wanted someone who was ethically, she didn't want someone who just made the money but lied and yani ripped people off and did it in a crooked manner. She actually wanted her tijara to be halal. Quraysh knew what halal and haram was when it came to money. And I'll point that out to you a little bit down the road. They knew what it was way before Islam, because Ibrahim alayhi salam's shara had halal and haram money. It talked about what was an acceptable way to make wealth and what wasn't. So they knew what that meant. Not all of them followed it, but they knew what it meant. So Khadija would send Maysara, and on 3 escapades every month, he would come back and he would report to her about him, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And when she asked him, he would say, this was his testimony, قال والله ما رأيت أحدا مثله. I've never seen anyone like this man. يعمل طيلة النهار. He works all day long. والله ما سمعت منه كذبة قط. I have never heard him say one word that was a lie. Like not once during this whole buying and selling business did he say something that was inacceptable. قال والله ما مد يده على المال قط. He never touches the money. I mean, whatever money comes in, he puts it with me, because he's he's never once looked at it or touched it once, alayhi salatu wasalam. يقول ما رأيت أحدا مثله. I've never seen anyone like him. So she would leave Maysara with the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam for another 2 months. And Maysara would come back and say the same thing. And sometimes he would tell her a story that was a little bit out of that. تقول والله مر علينا نهار وليس في السماء إلا غيمة. There was a day that came, he's telling Khadija, and it was a completely empty sky, and there was just one small cloud. تقول كيف ما مشينا تلحق بنا. Wherever we walk, it just follows us. We were shielded from the sun all day long, from noon to Asr, the sun didn't touch us. He would tell her this is what he's witnessing. Radiallahu anhu. The majority of scholars believe that he accepted Islam later. We don't have confirmation of it, but I hope so, that he did. And he would tell her about the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam and his ethics. Now that's a whole different story. Talking about someone's ethics is different. See, that's the third bucket. So yeah, you have an academic degree, you have some skill sets. What are your values like though? Are you truthful? Are you honest? Can you be trusted? Are you someone who is trustworthy? Are you someone who's compassionate? You care about other things, other people? Are you someone who, person of their word, when they say something, they'll actually come through with it? Whatever you say can be believed? Or what is it? This is a big deal. This is a big problem in the world. A lot of people have a lot of good skills and good attributes, but then that piece isn't there. It doesn't matter. Pray in the first saf as long as you want. Let the tears run down your face for rivers of tears. If you can't be trusted when you speak, it doesn't matter. If you can't be trusted when you speak, if you don't deal with people in a straightforward way, if you're not a straight shooter, then it doesn't matter. Well, at the end, this doesn't add up to anything. So that was the third bucket. Alayhi salatu wasalam was observed ethically. And when you're buying and selling, that's where a lot of ethics come out, because money's involved. Especially for men. You know, men bleed from their wallets. That's where the pain comes, and it's in their pockets. So that's where their ethics will be very, very clear. And Maysara traveled with the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. He saw يقول Maysara, the last time he came back, he said, he's telling Khadija about something that happened, that a man told the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, asked him about something. Is this whatever? Yeah, this is the value of something. He said, yes. فقال أتقسم باللات والعزة. Do you swear by اللات والعزة? فقال ما عبدتهما حتى أقسم بهما. I don't believe in them to swear by اللات والعزة to begin with. So Maysara, yani, because Khadija, in her essence, was also a muwahhida. She was one of the few people left that still believed in Tawheed. And all this will come, inshallah, very soon. And you'll see the examples of it, yani, very, very soon. So when she heard that, Maysara was saying that he doesn't worship any idols. He doesn't take any, because the Arab used to take their gods with them. They took their idols with them. So if they on a journey, they would take it with them and then they would worship. So the Prophet ﷺ didn't do any of that. And of course, that doesn't mean he doesn't have some idol back home that he cares for. But when he said that, Maysara reported back that he doesn't believe in this. So Khadija radiallahu anha built a certain degree of trust in him alayhi salatu wasalam after a couple of months. And she gave him her tijara. I mean, he became in charge of all of her wealth. And she was a wealthy lady. And he worked, and of course he got a cut out of what, and he made a good, his money standard was higher. He made more money, alayhi salatu wasalam. He was doing well. A year or so into doing this or more, the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam is now 25 years old. Single gentleman, he's always living his life, works, takes care of people around him, he's involved with his family, that's how he's living. Not really looking much into getting married at the time. I don't know why, but he wasn't. He had no relationships up to that moment, alayhi salatu wasalam. I think a lot of his wealth was just spent in other places, so he never put enough together. Like, he never had like a big wad of money. Every time he made money, he spent it either on family or people or friends or whatever. He didn't really have, he didn't have bad habits. He didn't drink, alayhi salatu wasalam, didn't gamble, didn't go on large escapades, and did not, you know, spend the summers in the Bahamas or anything like that. He just lived a simple life, alayhi salatu wasalam. But he never put together a lot of money. And the story goes like this. Khadija was extremely impressed by the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. And she liked him. But she wouldn't dare to say anything. And the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, his ethics wouldn't allow him to. He didn't look, he didn't say anything. He dealt with the money and went on his way. Khadija's friend, her name is Sayyidina Nafisa, radiallahu anha. She is sitting with Khadija. Khadija, she's asking Khadija, how is your business and whatnot? And Khadija's obviously just, she's talking about the Prophet alayhi salam. Oh, Muhammad takes care of it. He's this and he's that and he does this and he does that. And she's talking about how, you know, amazing an individual he is. So she says, Nafisa says, and there's a lot of Nafisas in the world. We don't have enough of them at this point, I feel. We need more of them. We need more Nafisas. People can do these things. They move things along. We have too many single people over the age of 25 and 30. فَقَالَتْ تَتَزَوَّجِينَ مُحَمَّدًا. How about you marry him? صلى الله عليه وسلم. قَالَ فَسَكَتَتْ خَدِيجَ. She didn't say anything. She kept quiet. She didn't say yes. She didn't say anything. فَفَهِمَتْ نَفِيسَ. Nafisa understood. So she goes to the Prophet عليه الصلاة. She's a second cousin to him عليه الصلاة والسلام. سيدنا نفيسة. قالت يا محمد ما لك لا تتزوج. What's wrong with you? Why don't you get married? فقال صلى الله عليه وسلم فقير. I have no money. ومن يتزوجني؟ Who's going to marry me? I have no money. فقالت خديجة. خديجة will marry you. فقالت أو تفعل؟ Would she do that? فقالت أسألها. I'll ask her. Yeah, because you want to keep her dignity. I'm going to talk about this story, don't worry. I'm going to tell you a few, give you my two cents on this story in a moment. So she'd go back and act like they're, you know, talking for a couple of days while the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam is boiling, waiting to see. Because as it happens, men, once this comes up, it takes away their ability to think about anything else. So he's waiting to hear back. Now, Nafisa already knows the answer, but she just wants to let him kind of boil for a while so that we can make this work. So he'd come back to the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, قالت رضيت خديجة. She's happy. قال فأتي بأبي طالب. Bring Abu Talib and come. The Prophet عليه الصلاة والسلام goes to Abu Talib, his uncle. And he said, I want to أخطب خديجة. So Abu Talib was very happy because she's a very known lady. And he would go with the Prophet صلى الله عليه وصحبه أجمعين, and they would do their nikah. And he would marry her. Khadija at the time was a few years older than him عليه الصلاة والسلام. The common understanding or knowledge is that she was 40 years old. She wasn't 40 years old. She was at most 28. Dr. Sheikh Abu Khalil al-Rahmu and Akram Diya al-Umari are two historians who actually took, when it came to ages, both Khadija and Aisha, and they broke down the possibilities. And it's impossible for her to be 40 before. She's going to have 6 children with him, alayhi salatu wasalam. And it just doesn't add up in terms of when her father was born and when she was born. It just doesn't add up. So she was around maybe 28, a few years older than him, alayhi salatu wasalam. And they would get married. He's 25, she's 28. So there's a couple of things here within this story that I think is worth kind of sharing with you before we kind of tell the rest of it. There's nothing wrong with a woman showing interest in a man when it comes to marriage, but it has to be done in a dignified manner, meaning the dignity of the woman has to be maintained during that time. A woman should not put herself down. She should not come off as someone who is needy, who's asking for a relationship. If you're listening to me, if you're younger sister, listen to me. Never do that. Never ever do that. Never ever come to a man and express that you're interested in that person. The moment you do that, his very simple brain doesn't understand what that means. He doesn't know how to deal with that information. Very few men have the ability to have that offered to them and still respect the woman. It's wrong, but it's the reality. And I'm not here to fix how we function as men. I'm just telling you what the reality is. So if you're interested in a man, then it has to be done through a nafisa. All right? You need some nafisa to do it for you. You can't do it yourself. I get this question a lot from sisters who are, you know, coming to an age where they want to get married. Don't, if you express interest in them, almost always it doesn't work. And if it does work, they will use that against you one day. It'll be used against you. He has to pursue you. He has to come and knock your door. And he has to come and ask for you. Now, it doesn't mean you're not allowed to show interest and have someone bring that across, but you have to have that done in a dignifying manner. And that is to maintain the integrity and the respect and the self-esteem and the self-confidence of our sisters and the women in our community. So it's very important. There's nothing wrong with the idea. Khadija did it, but it was done in a dignified manner. She didn't come off as she was an older lady trying to marry someone. No, that's not how this came off. And it didn't come off as him, alayhi salatu wasalam, trying to marry a lady with wealth. It happened in a very respectful, dignified manner. So just remember that and keep that in mind. That's number one. Number two, Khadija, this was her third marriage. Third marriage. Not second, and not first. It was her third marriage. This whole myth, this whole taboo that we've built around divorce or someone being a widow is very problematic. I don't know where it comes from, aside from medieval concepts from, I'm sorry to say Catholicism is not going after a religion, but if you study the history a little bit there, they had a certain view of women who were divorced and widowed that the Arab never had in Jahiliyyah. Asma bint Umays. Huh? Listen to this. Asma bint Umays, radiyallahu anhu, married Ja'far ibn Abi Talib, and Abu Bakr al-Siddiq, and Umar ibn al-Khattab, and Uthman ibn Affan, and Ali. All of them. They all died, but she married them all. And they all pursued her for marriage, and she accepted. Why? Because men looked for women who had high integrity, dignity, and a great lineage. I mean, a great background. A woman who had something to offer aside from her looks. It wasn't the looks they were looking for. They were looking at someone who could carry her weight, who could raise children to be great men and great women. They looked for people who came from great families and women who had accomplishments and people who could... When we break down the pursuit of marriage for men to be just looks, she has to look a certain way, this is a problem on so many levels. I'm sorry, it's on so many levels a problem. Now, I'm not going to be able to fix that. But if I can just get some of you, especially if you're younger and you're looking to get married, to think outside of figure. Think outside of just the way people look, because that is not who they are. What they look like is not who they are. And it goes both ways, by the way, at this point. It didn't a long time ago, but now it's going both ways. Now, on the other side, same thing. Looking for a guy, he has to look a certain way as well. You know, people like me are falling out of favor. A bit short with a girl, your market value is quite low. But that shouldn't be the case. It shouldn't be based on what you look like or how much money you have. See, Khadija's value wasn't with her wealth. Khadija was a lady of great status. She was very respectful and respectable. And she was a lady that people would come to for advice. She was wise, radiallahu anha. She had a lot of experience in life. She came from a great family. This is why the Prophet, والسلام, even though she was, this is her third marriage and she has three children, it wasn't a problem. It wasn't a problem. I'm not saying this so that we go and, you know, start breaking every norm that we know, but I think it shouldn't be, the way that we deal with people who are divorced is a little bit harsh. It's harsh on both sides, for women and for women and for men as well. And that shouldn't be the case. People should be a little bit more open-minded. That's number two. Number three, I believe that when it comes to the age difference, men, it's in their better interest to marry a woman who's a bit younger than them, because women mature before men do. They do. 15-year-old girl is usually mature more than me. Like they mature earlier. They're able to carry families and to take much earlier than men do. So when men and women get married, there's a difference of age in terms of men being a bit older. It ends up working out a little bit better from a maturity perspective. Now, for the Prophet alayhi salam, that wasn't the case. For him alayhi salam, he was probably the most mature person who lived in Mecca. So for him, it didn't make a difference whether Khadija was his age, older, younger. It didn't make a difference for him alayhi salam. But for our age, I think we do have something to look after here a little bit. If we want to remove the age barriers completely, which is again, a prophetic practice. The Prophet alayhi salam married a lady older than him. No problem. Actually, many of his wives were older than him, alayhi salatu wasalam, that came later. Then we have to make sure that our young men are of a certain degree of maturity so they can do that, because it's important. Fourth point. When you talk about marriage, I'm not sure if I put these in, did I make them into points or did I not? Okay, yeah, I'll just leave that there. I'll just leave it as that. There's a difference in financial status between the two of them. She was very wealthy. He was not, alayhi salatu wasalam. When it comes to Islamic law, there's something that we use, the word, a phrase that we call kafa'a, right? Adequacy. I talked about this throughout the summer. I don't know if I did a good job, but I talked about marriage quite a bit throughout the summer and I explained a number of ideas. Kafa'a is important. You have to know that the person, the two people, are able to meet each other's innate standards, the standards of life that they're used to. That's what kafa'a is. So it's important that it's there. Without kafa'a, marriage doesn't last very long. If two people get married and they're not able to meet each other's standards because we didn't look at the adequacy part, it doesn't mean that one's better than the other. No, differences is what we're looking at, not high and low. It's differences. If two people marry from very different backgrounds and their expectations within their homes are different, then they'll make each other miserable on either side. That's why fathers are and mothers are involved in assessing kafa'a. It's not to be used as a tool or a weapon to stop marriages that work just because you don't like the person's ethnicity or the color of their skin or how much money they have. It should be used to assess whether there's adequacy, whether these two people can meet each other's standards in a household. And even though there was a difference in money, that wasn't a problem because the Prophet ﷺ, he took care of the house. She didn't. She wasn't spending her wealth on the house. Her wealth was hers. He took care of the house. And since he was working in her business, the money that he made was enough to take care of them. Now, was there social adequacy? Of course. Of course, socially, the Prophet ﷺ was of a level of status and wisdom and from a family that was equal to Khadijah. There was full kafa'a between them. There's no problem. There was a difference in finances, but the Prophet ﷺ took care of the household. All right. Listen carefully to this. The man is responsible to take care of the household financially. This is the default of Islam. This is the default. You're responsible to spend your wealth on your wife, your children, and the house. She is not. She's not responsible to spend her money on these things. It doesn't mean she can't. It just means that if she does, there has to be a compromise elsewhere too. Or that has to be somehow calculated or maintained. Just like the woman is responsible for being the primary caregiver of the household and the children. It doesn't mean the man is not responsible, it just means she's the primary caregiver. It doesn't mean the man can't be a caregiver and take care of the house, but it means that if he does, there has to be a compromise elsewhere too. When men do this, when men start, have you ever made your husband do the dishes or clean the home? When they do it, they feel very entitled to many things afterwards because they don't do this easily. They'll do it, but they expect a lot in return because it's not their nature to do that. The same thing goes for a woman who is spending her wealth on the household. She'll do it, but she expects something in return. And that's okay if we agree to these things. Meaning when we talk about marriage, know what the default is. That default is based on our innate characteristics and attributes as human beings. So when you decide, okay, the default is not going to occur because maybe both are employed and we need both wealth, then we have to talk about, okay, how does this work? What is the wealth distribution going to look like? What am I going to do in return? You can't have a woman who is working, spending her wealth on the household and responsible for all of the primary caregiving of the home and the kids. That is dhulm. That is dhulm, I'm sorry. That's not okay. It happens a lot and it's not okay. So what do you need to do? You need to sit, you need to talk about finances, talk about distribution, and make sure that everyone feels. You can say, no, love should be enough. Oh, don't make me laugh. What are you talking about? That's how you ruin whatever love is there. If there is love and you don't talk about these things and you don't organize it appropriately, make sure everyone is being treated fairly, then love will go away. Because when you feel oppressed or you feel you're mistreated a little bit, when you feel like you're putting in more than the other person is, and you're bringing to the table more than that, what they're bringing to the table, then you will start feeling a little bit of resentment. A little bit of resentment becomes a little bit more resentment, and then it becomes a lot of resentment. And then whatever love is, used to be is no longer for something silly, which we could have been just agreed upon. Well, here's how we're going to do it. Here's how we're going to distribute the work. And this is specifically for the young brothers and sisters who want to get married soon. These discussions are what you have up front. The lovey-dovey stuff you can have later. All right, all the heart emojis and all the other stuff that you can do that later. There's enough time for that. Don't worry. You have for the rest of your life to do that. No problem. But these discussions have to happen up front. There's many different ways to run a household. There's many different ways to run a household. It could be the opposite. The lady's working, the man stays home. No problem. As long as we agree on making sure everyone is going to be treated fairly at the end. And no one's going to be ripped off and walk away feeling that they didn't get what they deserved out of it. Which is what's happening a lot. Are we that close? Oh, my gosh. All right. 25 years he would stay married to her, alayhi salatu wasalam. 25 years. They would have 6 children. You want to talk about a love story? Huh? All the Shakespearean garbage that they shovel into your heads when you're in high school. You want to talk about a love story? Talk about this one. He married her and lived with her 25 years. They had 6 children. They lost 2 of them when they were young. 2 of them died. Al-Qasim and Abdullah. They both died. A loss of a child in a marriage is extremely strenuous and difficult. They lost 2. Not only did he love her for the 25 years he was with her, alayhi salatu wasalam, he loved her for the 15 years later that came after. He loved her not till the day she died. He loved her the day he died, alayhi salatu wasalam. He spoke of her after she died every day. Every single day he would speak of Khadija. Every time wealth came into the house, every time a gift was given, he would cut a piece, wrap it up, and send it to one of her friends. قَلْ هَذَا نَصِيبْ صَاحِبَاتِ خَدِيجَ. Because her family by then had all passed away. So he sent to her friends. Aisha would say, I was never jealous of any of them, except this one lady who had died 15 years before he kept on talking about her. Khadija this and Khadija that, and Khadija this and Khadija. So I told him one day, what do you want with this lady her bones don't even exist in the grave anymore? You have me. And he got upset, alayhi salatu wasalam. قَلْ أَبْدَلَكَ اللَّهُ خَيْرًا مِنْهَا. Allah gave you a better lady, a better wife. فَقَالَ لَا وَاللَّهِ. That's risky for him to say, alayhi salatu wasalam. But he said it anyway. قَالَ لَا وَاللَّهِ مَا أَبْدَلَنِي خَيْرًا مِنْهَا. And then he counted, and we'll talk about them. He counted all these things. He stayed loyal to her, alayhi salatu wasalam. He would be lying in his house, and he would hear footsteps coming. And the footsteps sounded like the footsteps of Khadija. Yeah. He knew what she sounded walking. And she was obviously passed away years ago. It couldn't be her. So we say, Allahumma hala. Hala is your sister. It's not going to be her. May it be her sister. It would be turned out her sister. He would stop an army and go sit and talk to these old ladies. And the guy who's watching would stand there, one of the Sahaba. He told him not to follow, but he followed anyways. He said, Rasulullah, what are you doing? The army, who are these old ladies? فَقَالَ هَؤُلَاءِ صَاحِبَاتُ خَدِيجَةٍ كُنَّا نَتَذَكَّرُ الْأَيَّامَ الْجَمِيلَ أَيَّامَ خَدِيجَةٍ. We were remembering the reminiscing of the good old days, the days of Khadija, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. You want to talk about a love story? A love story doesn't end when they're standing at the altar getting married. That's where it begins. romantic movie, it ends when they get married. Yeah, Habibi, that's not where it ends. Show me 25 years into the marriage. Show me 25 years into the marriage. Show me later. I'll stop with that because they're going to start yelling at me for the kahoot. So end with that, inshallah. I'll continue the piece of his marriage, inshallah ta'ala, next week. Subhanallah, bihamdik, shalom, la ilaha illa anta, astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. Wa sallallahu wa sallam wa baraka ala nabiyyina Muhammad wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. Jazakumullahu khair, barakallahu feekum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum, everybody. Who's ready to play some Kahoot? Raise your hand if you're excited.
To
Okay, so the game code is 4336012. Try to get into the game as soon as possible. That way we can have enough time, inshallah, before Isha Adhan. We'll wait one more minute, inshallah, and then we'll get started. All right. Does anybody need any more time? Raise your hand. Okay. Let's try to get that as soon as possible, inshallah. Hurry up, please. Okay, we're going to get started. We're just waiting for one person. Okay.
Hello.
Go back. Okay. Seerah part 5. There's a couple unique questions, so be prepared. So the first question, what did the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam work as for 7 years, which taught him compassion and empathy? Was it a businessman, a shepherd? Yes, shepherd. Correct. We have Abdurrahman in first, Yasir in second, and NN in third, mashallah. Okay, next question. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam learned what aspect of war at a young age? Was it swordsmanship, defense, scouting, or archery? It was archery, if you remember. Okay, next question. We got Mr. Halal in first, Ahmad in second, and Yasir in third, mashallah. Okay, true or false? The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was a shepherd for 15 years and a merchant for 7 years. There was a hint in the first question. If you remember the first question, you'll be able to get this one correct. It was false. It's actually the other way around. Okay, we got Ammar still in first. Okay. The best way to learn something is to read the owner's manual, to practice it, to study it, or to fail at it. Which one is it? No, it's to fail. Practice works, but the best way to learn is to fail. Okay, you have to type this. You have to type this out. What should be in that blank? Khadija bint who? There's a couple ways of spelling it. They're all in there. So if you spell it relatively correct, it should be good. Remember that the faster you answer, the more points you get. Yeah. If you spelt it wrong, that's on you. So those were the four spellings that I put in. Not a lot of people got that. Wow. Okay. That's fine. We'll move to the next question, inshallah. We have Sara A in first, Cheyenne in second. Khadija, select all that apply. One could be correct, two could be correct, three could be correct. They could all be correct. You don't know. Yes, so it's green, blue, and yellow. She had been married before. We got Cheyenne back in first. Sara moved down to second. Yasser in third. Kareem in fourth. And Ammar in fifth. MashaAllah. MashaAllah. Question 7. Also multi-select. Things to look for in a marriage. Select all that apply. They could all be correct. Yes, they are all correct. Okay, next question. Sara A back in first, Yasser to second, Kareem in third. Okay. True or false? Financial responsibility in a marriage falls upon the man. Is that true or is that false? True. Leaderboard remains unchanged. Okay, second question, that's true or false? The caregiving responsibility in a marriage also falls upon the man. Is that true or is that false? Again, that doesn't necessarily mean that the opposite can't do it, but the main responsibility falls upon the man is what the question is asking. Is that true or false? False. Correct. Correct. Oh, S moved into fifth. Sara A still in first. Yasser in second. And Kareem in third. Question 10. The Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and Khadija were married for how many years? Was it 22, 25, 26, or 23? Yes, 25 is correct. MashaAllah. Majority of you guys got that correct. The leaderboard remains unchanged. Before we go to the last question, unfortunately today we don't have gift cards, but if you do win, then I'll get them to you next week, inshallah. So just let me know next week. Okay, last question. Love is the only thing you need in a marriage. Is that true or is that false? This should be fresh in your memory. Correct. False is correct. Okay. Let's see the leaderboard real quick. Third place, we have Kareem, mashallah. Second place, we have Yasser. And in first place, none other than Sara A. Dot, dot. MashaAllah, tabarakallah. Thank you, everybody, for playing. I hope you guys had fun and you enjoyed the halaqa. Jazakallah khair. We'll see you guys next week, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum. Allahu Akbar.